Aloha, and welcome to the Kauai Death Cafe, Death on the Radio. It's a death positive event. We're here today to soften how we approach the topic of death, dying, grief, rituals, and all of the ideas and approaches and modalities from here at home and around the world. Show topics will range from today's show, The Consequences of Caretaking, with our guest Bodhi B from the Maui Death Store, to the practical side of things like paperwork and understanding what happens when you actually die. My name is Jennifer, and I'm in studio with Susan, and we're here to facilitate the discussion, make introductions, and begin to ease into the idea of thinking about something we'll never be ready for, but we can prepare for, our death. Hello, and welcome to the Kauai Death Cafe. It's Soulful Sunday, and we're here to talk with Bodhi B. Susan and I are here in studio, and let's dish. Susan, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm not too bad. We're trying to load Bodhi B in here through Zoom, so I thought we'd just chat for a second while we get it all going. How's your week been?
Well, I told you, last night, for some crazy reason, I seemed to come to a greater level of peace about whatever the process is of dying, because we all know nobody cares about dying. It's just the process getting there, and I don't know what it was. It was in a dream state that it was like, oh, it's going to be fine. Everybody does it. And somehow it's gonna all work out. So another level of fear was, or apprehension or whatever, was removed, at least for the moment. Because this show definitely gets me into thinking about things in a much deeper way than I normally would have. So new things surprise me all the time. And that was a really positive night last night.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You woke up and felt rested and ready to charge?
In the middle of the night, I thought, oh, I'm not afraid. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And that was, again, for whatever moment it lasts, it was a really nice surprise.
That's so great. A lot of it is the acceptance of the people around you, too. And making sure you're leaving them in a happy place?
Well, that was part of it. I did have a great conversation with my son, and he's one step closer to being okay when I pass, and that's like the only thing left for me to consider is if he's okay. Otherwise, I'm fine. So anyway, we're getting Bodhi B right now, I think. Jen is at the wizard board.
Bodhi, are you there?
Oops.
What's that?
Oh, are you there, Bodhi? There we go. Maybe not. Are you there, Bodhi?
Where are you?
Hello?
I'm here.
Okay, he's here.
Hi, Bodhi.
Hi, Jenna.
That was Susan.
Hi, Jenna. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Bodhi.
Hello. Good morning. Maybe thank you for joining us.
Sure.
I think you can now. I wanted to play a little snippet of a caregiving program. It's a minute long, and it's from a program on PBS, because I know that you wanted to talk about the consequences of caregiving. So I thought we could open up by just sort of talking about what caregiving is for a quick second. And this is Bradley Cooper talking about caregiving his father. So if everybody can listen in, here we go.
People, I didn't even think about caregiving until my father was diagnosed with cancer. My dad was somebody who I idolized. I used to dress up like him when I was a kid in kindergarten and get made fun of because I wanted to wear like a suit and a tie. And then to go from that to giving him a bath is a quite a traumatic thing. The only good thing about somebody who has an illness that's terminal is that you really can try to enjoy the moments that you have left. We went around Philadelphia. We went to a Phillies game, we sat in the dugout. So that was a really lovely thing to be able to do. He was at a point where he needed a lot of care. I was lucky enough that I was able to be there for him, and I certainly benefited from the help that we also got. I mean, these are heroic people that are caregivers, period. Their ability to focus and give all of themselves is something that I stand in awe of.
There are only four kinds of people in the world: those who have been caregivers, those who currently are caregivers, those who will be caregivers, and those who will need caregiving.
All right. How about that?
That was pretty good. So
only four kinds of people in the world. Actually, you know, that wasn't the topic I had actually presented. I wanted to speak about the consequences of the phrase walking each other home. Oh. But I'll talk about anything you guys want to talk about.
Well, I think that is pretty much, I think that's in line, the consequences of walking someone home. That's the end of caregiving, right?
But I'm not actually going to address anything about caregiving because, and I'll go into it now if you'd like. I understand why people say that, and I'm around people that say that to their loved ones or to each other. And it's very comforting that somebody's going to go home, and we have a very strong sense of what home, or what we imagine home, feels like. But the consequences of walking each other home says that we're not home now. Mm-hmm. And that's huge, absolutely huge. And I'd like to go into that a little bit, because if we're not home now, we're homeless.
Ooh.
And I think that's actually what many of us experience, that homelessness that often shows up as loneliness. And what happens when we're not at home? Does the world look like the way it does because you treat a hotel differently than you treat your home? Mm-hmm. Because you know when you go home and you close the door and you get into your favorite cushy chair and you settle down and you relax, you get a sense of what home feels like or could feel like.
Yeah.
But if we're going home when we die and we're not home now, that, to me, that's why the world looks like the way it does. And to feel homeless and to be homeless, what adds to the homelessness is that so many of us, well, in America, on the average, everybody moves every 5 years. So the consequences of most people in America having moved every 5 years or whatever is that most people in America don't live where their people are buried.
Oh, right.
My people are buried in Europe or mm-hmm. 6,000 miles away on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So for most of us, we've lost the relationship of being able to visit the bones of our people. And as we know in Hawaii, that's a big deal. And not just to Hawaiian people, but to many indigenous people, to be close to where their people are buried and where there's the stories of their people are still alive in the land itself. Indigenous actually means connected to place.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're all homeless, and I think that's why we're so hungry, you know, that's what hungry ghosts are about. We're craving something and we don't even know what it is, and it's a sense of home. But that's not real for us until we figure out how to really become, let's say, more indigenous in terms of connected to place and connected to the bones of our people.
Yeah.
And I can go on, because that's why most people want to be cremated now. One, it's less costly financially, but it's way more costly environmentally. But most of us have lost the relationship or an understanding or the value of the relationship of going to where our people are buried. I had lost that thing myself until facilitating burials with our funeral home here on Maui, which I found out, by the way, is not only the only nonprofit funeral home in Hawaii, apparently it's the only nonprofit funeral home in the U.S.
Oh my goodness.
Which is wow. Amazing, really.
Yes.
Right here on Maui, right here in Hawaii. And so then we don't have a relationship with going to sit by the graves of our people.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't value it because it hasn't been in our lives.
Yeah.
So that I've rediscovered that. I thought I wanted to be cremated for a long time, and now I definitely want to be buried. So what happens in that homelessness and that loneliness and being so disconnected from where our people come from, we're also orphans in a sense. And you can imagine what that unconscious sense of homelessness and orphan, how that reverberates into how we act, many of us act in the world.
Yeah, everybody's lost looking for something to fill it.
Everybody's hungry, desperately hungry for something. And of course, a large piece of that is real connection.
Yeah.
You know, so many people talk about community.
Well, it's interesting.
But
that's interesting. I mean, a lot of times those stories that are woven into everything is part of your community. And if you're not in your community anymore, you don't hear those old stories about your grandfather.
Well, what you're saying is, do we even have community if we're homeless and orphans? Then this is really interesting, Bodhi. I'm kind of blown away by this hit on it. So keep going.
Well, that, you know, that's the gist of it, is like, what do we do with that? I'm not going back to Hungary and Poland to develop a relationship with where I come from. And of course, where did we come from before that? You know, Caucasian people come from the Caucasus Mountains. How did we get there?
Well, we should all go back to Africa.
Many cultures say we're actually star people, and supposedly our DNA is filled with star stuff.
Yeah,
so, but again, the way we and of course it's a, here's the other piece of this, and it's very much of a, in my understanding, it's very much of a Catholic story, that this isn't home, in the world but not of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other piece to that, which is also incredibly damaging, is God's not here. God's somewhere else,
right,
in the heavens or in the sky. God's not here. And that's where the word mundane, which is a Latin word that basically is, this is just dirt, just God's not here.
What
so
is mundane?
When you add up all of those, what's that?
What does mundane mean? I miss that.
This is just dirt. There's no spirit spiritual essence connected to this place.
Right.
You know, that's why you go home where it really is happening. And of course, many of us understand that it's not true that God's not here. God's very much here, always has been, even now, and that this is home. And how do we come into the realization and embodiment of making this earth more of our home than a hotel? And that's about a lot of things. Because so many of us are leaning forward into what's next and what's next and what's next, that we're never fully here to begin with. And I understand that there's a lot of conditioning around having us leaning forward into what's next, what's next, what's next, because then we have to buy stuff and we're dissatisfied and we need, again, that's that hunger. And of course, many people, if they actually stop and notice what they're really feeling about, what they think about and feel about themselves, what they feel about their lives, their partners, their jobs. There's a lot of unhappy people. There's a tremendous amount of self-loathing and self-hatred and self-judgment. Mm-hmm. You know, that's more than common. That's predominant. And again, in my work in being with dying people, sure enough, all that stuff shows up.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I was thinking about in relation to home, not a hotel, is if you're constantly using space like a hotel, you're not perpetuating anything like you do in your home, where you're perpetually fixing it up and nesting in it and, you know, having community coming there. Everybody knows it's a place to go. You know, there's no perpetual movement into the next sort of part of your life if you're just constantly running and replying to everything that's around you.
You're not putting down any roots. You're not putting down any...
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, people used to be buried where they lived.
That's where the... And then, you know, when you bury someone, all of the indigenous cultures believe that the wisdom's in your bones. So that's why they go back and visit those graves and those sites, because the wisdom is still there. It's in the bones.
Yeah, good. What's even maybe more damaging, or certainly damaging, is if this isn't our home, we don't care.
Yeah. Then you don't care about it. You just use it and leave.
Right.
Yeah.
And we don't seem to care, because... Oh, shit. Everything does seem transient.
His call dropped, but he'll be back.
Oh, I thought something happened.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
That's a big concept.
Yeah. It's a new one.
Yeah.
It's not your same.
I misconstrued what he said, because he wanted to talk about the consequences of going home, of walking someone home.
Yeah, but...
So in my mind, I immediately went to... caretaking,
yeah.
Because there's a huge consequence in being that caretaker and relinquishing that care.
Yeah, but he's off on another tangent.
I know. He's good.
Really,
he's deep.
You have to call him back, or he has to call you?
No, he'll call back through the line.
Are we on the air?
We are.
Hi.
Yeah. Well, let's play a song really quick, and we'll get Bodhi B back here. You're listening to the Kauai Death Cafe. We have Bodhi B as our guest today, and we're talking about the consequences of walking someone home. And the concept in that idea is that if you're walking someone home, that you're not home already. Bodhi, are you there?
I am here.
Perfect. We got a little bit disconnected from our phone call. And
that's kind of what we've been talking about, being disconnected.
Yeah, exactly. So we lost you right when we were discussing if you don't think that this is home, then you're not going to treat it very well while you're home.
Yeah, if we're just passing through and this isn't our home, we're disconnected from nature, which most people are disconnected from nature. We think it's out there. Of course, now so many people don't live close to nature that they only experience nature virtually on a screen. And of course, you don't get a sense of what nature is from looking at it on a screen. So then you lose interest in it. It doesn't mean anything to you. And so what happens to things that don't mean anything to you that you lose interest in? They go away. And so actually seeing nature on a screen might be the most harmful thing for nature itself, because you have to get in nature to actually know what it is and why it's so important. So I wandered off here a little bit, but the disconnect from self, of who we truly are, and the disconnect from nature, and the disconnect from, well, again, what happens when we recognize that we're homeless and are orphans. What happens is there's a lot of depression. There's a lot of drug and alcohol dependency. There's a lot of angry people that are acting out now. You can see that stressed people in general are more stressed with what's happening. Angry people are angrier, and so there are more angry people now acting out in violent and crazy ways, and we're seeing that. And what is the root of that? Well, the root of that is the existential crisis that we're going to die, and we don't know when, and the world could blow up, and we don't know when, and who are we then, or what are we going to do then? And since we were homeless and orphans to begin with, there's probably more alcohol and drug use going on. I don't know if that happened for you or people who are listening, but for many of us when we were younger, we gravitated towards Native people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, it was initially Native Americans. And what I, in thinking about what that was about, it was the it was the recognition or the realization that they had something that I didn't have. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what that was, but I could, there was something about their presence and their energetic that they had something I didn't have. And so now, what I see is that they knew who they were, because they were indigenous people who were connected to a place that had stories. They were connected to where their people have been telling their stories for a long, long time. And that helped them know who they were. It's just like in America, when people say, who are you? In America, most people say, well, I do this, and, this is my job, and, you know, this is how big my house is, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But in most traditional cultures, the answer to who are you is, you know, I'm the daughter of,
yeah.
I'm the apprentice of, I'm the teacher of, you know, it's all relationships.
Yeah. One of the things that came to mind when you were talking about the indigenous cultures is that they're so close to nature, and in a lot of science and spirituality, things are all engrossed in that nature. You know, we are pulling from our earth at a rate that we cannot even keep up with, and it's all nature. Even if they're bringing it in, you know, we're bringing it into our house, all the food that we eat. We're not eating it in the garden anymore, you know, and we're decimating nature. And what's happened, seems to me, is that there's a spiritual divide between nature and spirit. You know, like, this is where your spirit is. This is where your body can heal, is in nature. This is where you return to when you're ill, is nature. Ground yourself, get well, take medicine. You know, all of these things are coming from nature and its concepts. And so the deeper into spirituality that you dive, the more you realize its connection to nature, and everything is nature.
Well, spirituality is one thing, but do you think religion has a lot to do with the fact that we're not home yet? Do you think that's
absolutely a- most religions are salvation religions that if you act a certain way, you'll get there after you die.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's pretty core. You know,
it is very core. That's where walking each other home comes from, that you're going home. Your true home isn't here.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned, Susan, you mentioned people used to get buried in their yards.
Right.
Actually, for thousands and thousands of years, that was the case. And then people didn't have a yard, and so churches started having cemeteries.
Wow, yeah.
And that's where the church cemetery came from. And then people didn't want to be buried in a church cemetery, but they didn't have a yard, so that's when, you know...
Cremation.
That's when the mega business of cemeteries and funeral homes happened. Which is basically, and what we're trying to do with our nonprofit is, we're not selling anything. We want to help people. We want to help bring it back to community work as sacred community work, instead of money. And, you know, people can't even afford what it costs now. Many people come to us, they can't afford the cost of being dead.
Right.
That must be why nobody wants to be dead. But the same is true, coming back to Bradley Cooper's piece. It used to be that we just took care of our family, and we were, you know, it wasn't just a nuclear family. It was village life, and in village life, we were all taking care of each other. And at the core, what makes community, you know, what builds village life is the way we take care of each other. Right, which is why when some people are dying and it's common that they say, I don't want to be a burden, I don't want to ask for help. But in a village building a life, we need people to take care of. That's what life is, that we take care of each other instead of who's going to take care of me. And we meet many people that are very afraid of nobody's going to show up to take care of me.
Because they can't afford it. To me,
they can't afford it, and they're not connected to community.
Well, yeah, not connected community. Like you said, if we move every 5 years, it's hard to get connected with a community. But then it becomes, like my biggest fear was couldn't afford someone to take care of me.
Yeah.
Which is why I opted to do what I want.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a really amazing problem. I don't know if you have a solution, if you have an idea of where to go.
Well, we're training the people to, as death doulas, to help fill the huge health care crisis in America, but certainly we're focused on Hawaii. Hospice can't be there all the time.
Right.
So there's a lot of times when the regular folk, not just the Bradley Coopers, but all the regular folk who can't go to work because they need to stay home to take care of mom. And that's a common story. And of course, if it's just you staying home to take care of mom, that's a recipe for burnout, which is also epidemic in the healthcare world. Mm-hmm. Not just in the professional healthcare world, but in the mom and pop that are staying home to take care of grandma.
Yeah, that's
it's a burnout, and because again, village life has been broke. We've been broken into these little nuclear families, and we have. And again, because like you said, we move. We're not in this village of where everybody's taking care of everybody, making sure everybody's eating, and making sure there aren't homeless people on the streets.
Yeah.
Oh my God! And
homeless people on the streets is a clear indication of how broken we are as a people.
Yeah, we're only doing as well as the worst one of us is doing. That's what I like to say, and it's a terrible thing to say.
Well, no, I heard too that nobody gets enlightened until every single one of us are.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you reach some pinnacle, you got to come back down and.
Mm-hmm. But it takes a very special type of individual to turn towards, you know, and the village isn't set up that way anymore.
Right.
You know?
So that's what Bodhi said.
What do we do about that?
Yeah.
Well, and then you look at the numbers and the statistics of who the caretakers are in these days, and there's no giant caretaking organization that's giving everybody who's a caretaker insurance and wages that are acceptable and time off and, you know, any kind of benefit for your own self for the future.
Well, because it's become a profession instead of like what Bodhi's saying, mm-hmm. just part of what the community did.
But every other profession would give you those things. You go work at the schoolhouse and you get insurance. But, you know, these caretakers are out there in the world and, you know, over 65% of them are women. And
well, I'm just thinking it's a new profession in our world, because probably not that many years ago, people took care of their own family.
Yeah.
So the idea.
But better, in my view, better than a new profession is things like what you're doing in terms of educating people on your show, in terms of more and more groups of people getting together. You know, a part of it is the baby boomers are finally realizing that their parents are dying and their friends are dying.
Yeah.
And we've changed most everything. but at the core of this one is about community. Instead of a new profession, it's about community getting together and coming together to know each other and have a willingness to, I'm going to show up for you and you're going to show up for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's village building, and I think that's the antidote to all of it in terms of how do we, in the midst of what is so broken, to feed the news story, and a part of the news story is how we make real community. And again, how we make real community is how we take care of each other. And so how do we break through? You know, we're a car culture. Most people hardly know who lives next door.
Mm-hmm.
That's where to me is where we start in terms of, village building. You know, we want to know the people that come and care for us when we're dying. I see that. You know, we don't want strange professionals coming in. We do because that's what's available.
Right.
But what we really want is our friends or our people you know, who care about us and know us and love us.
Yeah.
And it's not a job, right? That's the difference. It's not a job.
And not everyone gets people who know them and love them. And
because they don't live in their community anymore.
And maybe they're not so friendly.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the broken part of the story. Mm-hmm. I'd rather focus on, you know, how do we, you know, take steps today to find out who our people are. Right? It must be even more lonely if you don't know who your people are and you don't live close to your people.
So how would I, in this small community, what could I do to make that a reality? Cuz right now we've got the locals and the Howleys and the rich people and the poor people and the, you know, there's no continuity. And
that's the thing about death, though. It doesn't matter how much money you have or don't have or what color you are or what religion you are. Everybody's going to die. And most people, no matter what their economic or blood type is, you know, what race they are, a lot of people die in a very similar way. Unless they're really rooted in their indigenousness, and even if they are, most people die in a very similar way in terms of the work it's dying well, actually, is an art.
It's hard and, to get to die well.
You know, there's work in dying well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in that sense, it doesn't matter.
Well, what's dying
well? So then
well?
How do you bridge? What's that?
What is dying well? I don't know what that would look
dying
like.
Well is a whole other a radio show in
okay.
terms of
good.
You know, dying well is the opposite of the horror stories we see and have witnessed, either on a screen or personally, in terms of how hard it is sometimes to die. And of course, in the 50s, when they invented the intensive care unit, people were mostly dying rather quickly from car crashes and heart attacks. And of course, now we know you can be dying for years from, you know, all kinds of diseases that many of you know. And that doesn't look good to most people. And of course, that's another radio show about how that's led to we all want to have the access to the pill to end our lives.
And
the consequences of what that does to life and death. You know, dying well is we need to be around it. We need to be around it to care for the people who are dying. And dying well is doing the work of taking care of any unfinished business. Dying well is making peace with your life. And making, you know, there's three areas that I teach in helping people do that work. You know, living well leads to dying well. And how do you live well? You find a way to make peace and with yourself all the way, so that you completely love yourself and believe in yourself and let go of the self-judgment and self-hatred. Then there's the work of community in terms of, you know, all your thoughts and concepts and beliefs about everybody else and your relationship to your community. You know, did you bring any value to your community? You know, how do people remember you? Or what do people think about you? You know, are there people, are you filled with a community of people who love and respect and appreciate every part that you give to life in the village? Or are there people that are resentful or angry at you or still mad at you because you didn't do this or that? Or, you know, how many stories have we heard about, call up my son, he's 6,000 miles away, I need to tell him I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, we've heard many, that's a common story, because people have this, that's kind of like the halfway house. It's kind of like the hell realm of, it all comes back at you in terms of your whole life. It's all there.
It starts flashing.
It's the life review. So that's the second area, the self area, the community area. You know, what did you do with your life? You know, did you bring value to your community? Was it just all about what can I get? And then the third piece is your relationship to your spiritual, your soul, to God, whatever you call it. Is that a real thing? Because otherwise it can be terrifying to not have that there to support you and hold you in the midst of what could be painful and a lot of suffering.
Yeah, the what do you believe part's kind of hard to understand until some people get right there at the end.
Well, the beliefs tend to fall away mm-hmm. unless they're really real and have been showing up all along. They don't just all of a sudden appear because you're dying.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a piece of what dying well includes.
Yourself, your community, you know. And your spirit self.
Yeah, you're and Ben, basically all of that is relationships.
Yeah,
that's the part that strikes me, like, in terms of what can, I'm really moved by this whole new concept. And so what does it mean? To me, the only thing I can think of where we can make any kind of change would be in our grassroots community. And so I'm right now thinking, well, what could we do? Or can be done.
I've been working with a friend of mine who has terminal cancer, and one day she just popped up and she said, I know what I need to do to leave behind. And part of it is basically a template of care, because she's a single person. Her family's not near here. They live in another country. And we've put together a care team that consists of her friends and family. And my one friend that sort of spearheaded the whole thing, she's a tight business person. So she literally, you know, put one person in charge of interfacing with the doctor, the other person's in charge of her finances. Another person comes and cleans the house once a week. Another person goes to all her appointments. And we've been running her life like a business. And, you know, like a care business. And it would be really hard. It would be really hard to implement that for other people, you know. We were able to do it because we do have a village here. And we knew what each other's strengths were. So we could kind of like appoint each other to these positions. But outside of that, it's, you know, it's really hard to throw a ball up in the air and somebody's going to catch it, you know. It's difficult.
I'm glad you added all those other pieces, because sometimes people are very daunted by thinking that they're going to have to do this hard work sitting at the bedside of a dying person. But, you know, sometimes it's checking the mail or walking the dog, and you create and there are way, there are great templates for creating caregiving teams. That, you know, I'll give an assignment to everybody listening. This week, call up 5 people and ask them if they'll be on your care team when your dying time happens.
Yeah.
You know, call up 5 people. Hey, will you be on my team? And of course, it's a vulnerable position to put yourself in, because maybe your best friend is going to say, no, I'm sorry, I couldn't really do that. And you know, you have to deal with that. But, it's a great conversation starter. You show up and, you know, start the conversation, you know, have a place in town where you want to have a, you know, caregiving support group for anyone that's already caregiving, and then people that would like to dip their toe in or want to find somebody who's going to, like you said, the person that lives alone that's is terrified that no one's going to show up. And, you know, those are the grassroots places to you know, get the conversation going. You find out right away who's interested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you want to. I mean, like I said, what you're doing on the radio is a piece of it.
Yeah. I talk to people sometimes, and it's definitely got their mind rolling.
We're such a culture that's in such aversion and avoidance and denial about the whole thing. I mean, I have friends in their 80s that don't want to talk about it. I have a friend I go visit who's 101, and he doesn't want to talk about it, you know?
Yeah.
I said to him, how often do you think about death? No, I don't think about it at all. I'm like, okay, so now when I go to see him, I don't talk about it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you can bring it up, but I don't understand it, but, you know, I don't want to judge it, but it's part of the aversion, avoidance, and denial. I mean, we have a store in front of our funeral home called the Death Store, And there ought to be one in every town and every mall next to every Starbucks to remind people that, that death is present in community life. Yeah. And that's not a bad thing. Like you were talking about nature. When you study nature, you see life and death are in this amazing dance together, and that one couldn't happen without the other. Right. In fact, you can hardly tell where one ends and the other begins. Mm-hmm. That it's this weaving of how it is, of how, you know, I guess death probably had some really lousy marketing back in the day when it was a guy dressed in black with a huge scythe, yeah. And, you know, here comes the plague. But, you know, that's not actually the truth of what death is. You know, a healthy life includes its death. Yeah. A healthy life includes its death. There's no way around it, and that's a beautiful thing. And you don't find out you're dying because you're being punished or you did something wrong. Although a lot of people do go into some kind of thing around I did something wrong, I'm being punished, or even worse in the spiritual New Age communities of why did you create your cancer, which is just such crap. It's just such nonsense, and of course it turns out it may have nothing to do with what you eat, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but that's part of the aversion, avoidance, and denial. And I'll tell you another thing, that celebration of life to me is also part of the denial and the aversion. Because now I'm quite often now I get invited to guide what's called a celebration of life, and when I do, I say, look, before we get to the celebration of life, we got to touch in at where you got the phone call and what happened for you when you heard, or you got the message when you heard that, you know, your partner or your friend or your relative just died or just got a diagnosis. What happened to you? And something happens to just about everybody, and it's pretty much the same thing that happens to everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's where a memorial or a funeral needs to start. Because if we skip that part in terms of people's feelings
when they're still alive
and what came up for them and the grief that is still present,
right.
And we just skip to the celebration of life, that to me is anti-life.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have to add this. I went to one of those celebrations of life, and someone said, oh, you came to the going away party. I thought that was a funny way to... switch it.
Again, it's and then of course you now have people have living wakes, mm-hmm. and those are beautiful, but they're not wakes. Those are the celebration of life, is
right.
When you have the person that's dying actually be there to witness all the love and reflections.
Absolutely.
And where they did add value to community life, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely a very beautiful thing, and that to me is what a celebration of life is.
Or
not after they die.
I had a eulogy party when I was 60, and that was
much
fun and so funny, and everybody said whatever they were going to say, and I was there, so it was a celebration. Totally,
yeah, that's
agree.
Beautiful.
I like that.
And then initially when we started our funeral home and our educational organization, I thought, well, I want to get rid of the whole thing about black.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and,
yeah.
So I thought, let's bring in the full rainbow. But you know what? I've come back to the black thing because it's a statement.
Mm-hmm.
It's a statement, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like you hear about these cultures that, you know, the widow wore black for a year.
Yep.
And again, that's a beautiful thing that basically bears witness that death happened.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like when I had an old Cadillac hearse that I drove around Maui, and people would stop, you know, on the street when I went by. A lot of people did, and that's the same thing. When you see a hearse go by, it's another let's say placeholder that reminds you that death is present. And we've made it so invisible in America that it's usually some gray minivan that comes to the neighborhood to pick up your next door neighbor that died, and you don't even know anybody in your neighborhood just died, or how many people in your neighborhood are dying right now, mm-hmm. because we've made it so invisible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Care is what makes us human.
I agree, and care is certainly, and the way we care for each other reflects to what level we're a real people, we're a real community.
Mm-hmm. We're real humans.
And again, if we just want to call up the professionals, and we do, and sometimes we need to, but oftentimes it does a disservice to us to not claim it as community village building work.
Absolutely.
Well, the surfers still have a huge community where I live, and there's definitely the paddle outs, which is the most I've seen of community in a long, long time. They've really kept
That's it. A very beautiful thing. I love that. Yeah. That happens here, too, on Maui.
Yeah.
And yet that same level of showing up often isn't happening when somebody needs care.
That's true.
When I watched that PBS program earlier, it said something that was interesting. It was that there's no system in place to support a quality of life for someone who's diminishing for an extended period, you know? And it's a lot like giving birth. You know it's going to happen. You're pregnant. But the exact day that it's going to happen, no one can predict.
And how long your labor is.
Yeah, or how long your labor is, how painful it's going to be, yeah. You know, where it's really going to happen, you know. And it's hard because everything is so unique, you know. Everybody's way out is unique and different.
Way in and way out.
way in too. Holy.
They're both unique. Well, you've given me a lot to meditate on, Bodhi. I'm just my head's spinning.
Great.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And you have any other big issues, let's talk about them here again.
Great, happy to. You guys are doing a great thing on Kauai.
Well, thanks to you a lot. You've been a humongous benefit to both of us.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you.
And
thank you.
Your input. It's been valuable.
That means a lot. That means a lot to me. Thank you.
It means a lot to everybody.
You mean a lot to me and to everybody.
Yes.
So thank you, Bodhi.
Beautiful.
Absolutely.
Oh, you're so welcome. You going to play my song, Jenna? Did you find it?
I haven't found it yet, but I can go.
She's
right
looking
here
for it now.
It's a great going out song.
Oh, perfect.
She's getting it.
So this, this on the 2nd of July, which is Wednesday, I believe, I'm going to be hosting with two other women a Death Cafe live in person at Cafe Vegetate, which is in Kapa'a, right across from Kintaro. It's in the old Russell's little house back there. So you can come and have a coffee, and we'll talk about death in a little sort of in-person, real, actual death cafe. So that's coming up soon. And
can I make a plug for a course that I'm teaching soon?
Absolutely.
I would love
it speaks right to what we're talking about, because this course is about doing your own work and preparing for death, the logistical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual work to die well, and also how to care for dying people. And it's an online course, and it starts at the end of September. It's called Facing Death, Nourishing Life. And you can go on our website, Doorway Into Light, and go to the education menu to find out more about that course. And this is the 6th year of that course. It's a great course. And not only does it help you prepare for your own death and can come into some level of comfort, but it gives you a lot of confidence to show up to support dying people in your community. And on top of that, it turns out it's going to help you meet what's falling apart in the world. Mm. DoorwayIntoLight.org education menu.
Love it.
All right. Yeah, I've been looking at that. I don't know if I'm going to be around to actually do the Zoom thing, but I'd sure like the information, so I will look into that.
Yeah, pass it around. Thank you.
Yeah. And now she's getting the music.
Is it by, it's not by the Old Dogs?
Still Gonna Die by Crossbreed.
I don't know why. It's, I cannot find it on Spotify or YouTube.
I wonder if I could play it through my phone. Should I try to play it through my phone?
Yeah.
You can try, yeah.
Okay, hold on a minute. I'll get it.
He's gonna get it. So...
Okay, here it is. Well, you tell me when.
Go for it. Well, thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.
Okay, you take care, Jenna, Susan. You're great people, and I love you.
Thank you. We love you, too. A million mahalos.
You're still going to die. You can switch to Chris.
You're going to die. Bye. Well, thank you. We'll be on next week on Sunday. It'll be the first Sunday of is it the 6th? Yeah, Kumu Kehau is going to join us, and we're going to talk about Indigenous Hawaiian behavior around death and dying. So I hope everyone can tune in and join us for that, and join us down at Vegetate at 8 a.m. on Wednesday, July the 2nd. For an in-person death cafe, and back here July the 6th with Kumu Kehau for our normal on-air program. Everybody have a soulful Sunday. We're going to have Alexi Murdoch take us out with Orange Sky. Have a great one.